Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
42, 18 before 10, Tommy Tucker on this Wednesday morning, January the 13th. We're talking about debt and deficit, and how important are those two things right now? Just so you know, deficit runs year to year. Debt is what accumulates year after year after year. Some economists argue we should support large deficits because of the economy. Others say, no, now is not the time to spend. Well, we spent a half an hour with Michelle Sternthal. She said now is the time to spend. I don't think Chris Edwards feels that way. He's the director of tax policy studies at the Cato Institute and editor of DownsizingGovernment.org. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks for taking the time with us. So for people that say, well, you know what, now is the exact time to look at debt and deficit, or rather not to worry about it, now's the time to spend. What would you say to them?
I think it's reckless what the federal government is doing. I mean, to put the numbers in perspective, in 2020, the federal government spent $6.6 trillion and raised $3.3 trillion in taxes. So that's like, if you think about an individual, that's like an individual earning an annual salary of $33,000 a year and spending $66,000, so, you know, $30,000 on credit cards. So that's what the government is doing. And 2021, it looks like it'll be the same. Another $3 trillion in debt. All that debt is cost pushed forward to young people in the future. And here's something that people don't seem to get. They say, oh, well, we have a big emergency in 2020, the pandemic, which, of course, is true. Mm-hmm. But down the road, the next further generations, young generations, Americans in the future, they're going to have their own crisis. We may have military crises in the future. We may have other health crises in the future. We may have natural disasters. They're all going to cost money. So people down the road are going to be paying the cost of their own disasters, plus they're going to be essentially paying the cost of the emergencies we have now because we're pushing all the costs forward in debt. So I think it's completely unfair, and I think it's reckless, and it really damage the economy.
All right, so let me throw a couple of things at you that our previous guests said, one of which is that, and I made the comparison to a credit card and my own personal life, and she said, well, that's not really a good analogy because unlike the federal government, I can't print my own money. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but I mean, that suggests that it's somehow free. If the government is borrows money now or prints money now, it gets money, then it goes out and spend it. Real resources have been spent, so they have to come from somewhere. If the government is giving you money or businesses handouts, that is ultimately real resources that have to be sucked out from somewhere else in the economy, or it needs to be borrowed from foreigners, and we'll have to pay them back down the road. Here's the thing that, you know, this is going to lead to a crisis like it led to a crisis in Greece and other countries a decade ago. And when the crisis happens, it's going to probably mean higher inflation. Higher inflation is a tax on working people and average people. It won't hit rich people as hard as it hits lower income people. The value of the U.S. currency will drop, which means that everything we import, clothes and cars, electronics, that'll all cost more. That'll be a tax on average people. Banks are going to get into deep financial trouble because they're holding all these U.S. government treasuries. So it's there'll be a cascading crisis when all of this, when all of the stuff hits the fan, and it'll be really damaging, mainly to average working people.
In terms of people that are hurting, people that let's just say social nets, I guess, or safety nets. How do you balance that, the needs of people during a bad time like now? And I know you said that there's always going to be a bad time, maybe not as bad as now with the pandemic, but how do you balance that with government expenditures in terms of taking care of people that, and I guess first thing is to determine who can and who can't take care of themselves and who won't, as opposed to those who can't. But anyway, how do you balance all of that? Where do you figure that in the federal spending?
So even before the government, with all these bailout packages since March, has spent $3.5 trillion extra dollars, an unbelievable amount of money. But even if it hadn't spent any additional money, that we would have all the usual regular federal government aid programs like unemployment insurance and food stamps were all still in place. So everything the government's done is sort of in addition to all the usual welfare state programs we have. Secondly, it's not, a lot of these government spending programs are actually going to delay recovery for various reasons. Like if unemployment insurance benefits are too high, it means people will delay going back into the workforce. And the business press is full of stories of businesses like manufacturers having a hard time hiring people now because the unemployment benefits have frankly been too high. So there is damage in this extra spending, and in some ways it actually delays recovery. It's true that initially, providing emergency aid made sense, especially when a lot of state governors were mandating all these closures for business, particularly small business. So it makes sense if the government's going to shut down small businesses to provide aid for them. But we've gone way overboard here. And I find it remarkable that, the incoming Biden administration is promising even more spending. Well, we've done enough. We've already pushed $3.5 trillion of costs forward onto young people in the future. That's enough.
What would paying down the debt look like? Because I don't know that. Two questions. Do you ever realistically foresee anyone having the political will to stop spending and pay down the debt?
In the United States, no, but there have been other advanced countries, Sweden, Canada, and others that have run into big fiscal debt problems in the past that have done a very good job of paying down debt. I don't know whether our political leaders are up to it, frankly, and I'm very, very worried. I mean, our federal government debt now is hitting its all-time record, which it had previously hit in World War II, of about 100% of GDP. And the current official forecasts show that that's going to keep soaring to about 200% of GDP by 2050. It's completely unprecedented. I mean, the country has never been in the situation it is in today. And, people say, oh, well, interest rates are low now, the government can borrow cheaply. Well, yeah, the interest rates are low now, but interest rates will probably rise in the future. Indeed, they may spike in the future, and that is going to cause the cascading of all these problems. If interest rates, the federal government can now borrow very low cost, 1%, at a 1% interest rate or something like that. But if interest rates rise to 4 or 5% or so, that's going to create this, massive increase in government costs. And the government's going to have to do something, either pass a massive tax hike or slash benefits like Social Security benefits that people rely on. So, this isn't free. The costs are going to manifest sometime down the road in some way, either giant tax hikes, more inflation, which is just a tax hike, higher interest rates, which are going to damage, home buying and mortgage markets, higher interest rates, which are going to damage business investment. So the costs are going to happen sometime down the road.
So let's just look at what you just said. Increase taxes, maybe do away with tax cuts for wealthy people. The Republicans will never go along with that. On a Democratic side, cut spending and reduce benefits. The Democrats will never go along with that. So how does this story end, Chris? I understand we're having a very important theoretical and hypothetical conversation, and realistic in a way, but when you balance that with the lack of political will, how do you see this story ending?
Well, but I mean, in a crisis, where the government would be forced to act. I mean, the crisis will come, again, when interest rates start rising. With the federal government needs to roll over its debt constantly. It needs to borrow now over $1 trillion a year of new, fresh money. And so it's not going to be able to borrow anymore if it's got to pay back. It's got to pay all that interest.
So, Chris, let me jump in real quick before we run out of time. And I want to ask you this. To the average guy, me, other people listening right now, when it does come crashing down, what is that going to look to us like in our lives? What are our lives going to look like then?
Higher inflation, higher interest rates. You won't be able to get a mortgage to buy a house. Businesses won't be able to borrow because interest rates will have soared so high. You just have to look what happened in the late 70s. Interest rates and inflation soared, and it took years for the Federal Reserve to wrestle the problem down until we ultimately, resumed growth in the 80s under Ronald Reagan. But Greece got into this trouble 10 years ago. Unemployment rate soared to 30%. Even 10 years later, the Greek unemployment rate was still 15%, and its standard of living had plunged, and it still has not recovered from the debt crisis that got in a decade ago. So there will be long-term pain if we hit this big financial crisis caused by government debt.
In the 70s, you had inflation and interest rates racing each other like cars in a video game. 16.5% was not uncommon to buy a home. The inflation was crazy. Was that a direct result of debt and deficit?
It was a result of loose Federal Reserve monetary policy. We did have growing deficits in the 70s, but it was mainly just that the Federal Reserve ran too easy a money policy, sort of like our Federal Reserve is doing now. And while the expert economic forecasters say, promise us that interest rates will stay modest in the near term and inflation is no problem now, economic macro forecasters have a terrible forecasting record. So policymakers ought to treat what the Federal Reserve says very skeptically, and they ought to be prudent. They ought to lean on the side of prudence, and they're not doing that. They're running the most reckless possible policy and getting us into a corner, so that's going to be very difficult to get out.
I bought my first home when I was 20-ish, and the interest rate was 13.5%. And I got to tell y'all, you ain't going to like it if it goes back to that. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Chris Edwards, Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute and editor of DownsizingGovernment.org. No kidding, 13.5% interest rate on a home. Taking a break, coming back, finding out what Newell Norman has planned for us today here on WWL.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.